Hello there, welcome to Series 2, Episode 6 of the Tech Means Business Podcast. Over the course of these podcasts, I'm talking to people who are at the forefront of technology in business settings. Maybe they're part of a vending operation or an organisation that's pushing the boundaries of what's possible with technology. There are, of course, very few businesses in the world today that aren't in some way digital businesses. So it's a broad subject area, as you can imagine. Therefore, what we try and do is carve out specific subject areas and source people in that particular niche who can help and guide us through the issues that face them, their users, and their organisations. Now, back at the beginning of Series 2, we spoke exclusively to Stephanie Shiras of Red Hat, the general manager at the RHEL business unit. RHEL, R-H-E-L, being, of course, the Red Hat Enterprise Linux, the operating system that powers many enterprise desktops and servers right across the world. Today, we return to Red Hat, but this time in conversation with Ben Henschel. He's the general manager for Southeast Asian markets at Red Hat, and he's based in Singapore. We'll be discussing the challenges facing business in the APAC, in the Asia-Pacific region, that is, with particular reference to open source software, cloud services, fintech especially, business practices and attitudes, and much else besides. But first, welcome, Ben, to the Tech Means Business podcast. And as has come to be something of a tradition around these parts, please give us a little potted history of your career, biography, autobiography, I suppose, and how you ended up where you are at Red Hat today.
Sure. Joe, thanks very much. I have been working for Red Hat for over 12 years and in various roles, both in Australia and in Asia. And as part of that, I've had the luxury or the privilege, I should say, of experiencing a real diverse set of cultures that is the Asia Pacific and particularly the ASEAN region in the last 5 years or so. I've been originally started out of Sydney, Australia, working for Red Hat, and then moved up to Singapore and was there for 5 years in various roles, and most recently looking after the Southeast Asian region, which includes effectively the ASEAN region, except for the Singapore country itself. And I think probably what's most interesting about, for your readership or listenership, I should say, that I could bring to this is the way that Red Hat has been what I call a challenger brand in the software or enterprise software space, being this open source free, you know, this idea of free and Linux and accessibility, to now being kind of what I call a mainstay in enterprises and governments and, you know, tier one and tier two institutions. It's now kind of bread and butter, part of their IT components, and Red Hat is used pervasively across the Southeast Asian region. And the impact that that's had, I think, is quite profound. And the way that Red Hat itself has evolved, and I've evolved as an individual in trying to help organizations and governments and institutions apply these really fascinating IT architectures and software practices in this, you know, brave new world of digital transformation has really, really kept me on my toes. To sort of close it out, Joe, with regards to IT, for a person to work at an IT company for 12 plus years, it's a bit like dog years or cat years. You know, 1 year equals 7 years for a human, so to speak. I think that's quite akin to the IT world. If you stay at an employer for like that for that long, that is considered a long, long time. And the reason I've done that is because I just find it so fascinating and challenging, and it really, really keeps you on your toes and intellectually stimulating, because you're always addressing, you know, really cutting edge challenges.
Your enthusiasm about technology, your fascination, is something that I definitely share, and something that I find personally in the Linux operating system, where it's possible, of course, even on your desktop daily driver, to run the very much cutting edge in technology. Now, as an open source and Linux-based company, is that technology-first approach one that's driving your customers' digital transformation?
It categorically does, Joe. So I think our CEO, our prior CEO, Jim Whitehurst, who For those who don't know, he was our CEO. He joined about 2 weeks after I joined Red Hat in 2007, actually. And then he's recently gone on to be a president at IBM because we've been actually recently acquired by IBM. He described several years ago, which I very much comprehensively agree, that innovation is the defining word of the 21st century. And the rate of accelerated innovation is at levels that are unprecedented. And the digital or digitization has exploded the facility and the facilitation of innovation, of ideation, ideas. And because now, you know, there are large swaths of the world that have access to, you know, internet, which is now the great leveler, that is driven by software. Software drives innovation, and that drives ideation and creativity. It drives interoperability and openness. And at Red Hat, we say openness unlocks the world's potential, which then facilitates. The other thing that Red Hat says is ideas worth exploring. And that idea, what we call ideas rise to the top, or the code speaks, the best ideas rise to the surface. You have now this rapid conglomeration of intellectual property through the means of open source that the what we call the traditional proprietary software world, that is Microsoft and others, can't compete with, because now you have the world coming to, you know, the conversation and the way of innovation and contributing ideas, and then releasing that back out to the world, because open source is accessible to everybody. The proprietary world can't keep up with that. And Microsoft, I just want to point out, is one of our best partners now, because they you know, if you listen to Satya, the CEO, you know, he and the organization themselves are really behind open source and the open source model and ethos of ideation and openness and accessibility to software and development. So everybody can, what we call, hack on the ideas, and then that creates you know, constant updates and new features and services. Yeah.
So despite the world coming to open source, Microsoft included, does some areas of business, some particular verticals, shy away from the openness, the open aspect of open source technology? One thinks of the financial sector, for instance, as being terribly conservative, small c in particular. How does open source play, if you like, in those sectors?
You know, Joe, honestly speaking, it's a really, really good question to ask, because there's a lot of misunderstanding or just misapplication about what we would call the brave new world of cutting edge, innovation, openness, accessibility, rapid change, and where financial institutions are, you know, one of their core brand, goodwill offerings is trust and stability and security. And so how do you have that contention of cultures and sort of brand affinities together that meet in the middle? And so I think I can categorically say, in my experience, looking after financial services for some time at Red Hat and being based in Asia and traveling around and meeting various chief information officers from the various banks across the Southeast Asian region, whether it's in Thailand or Malaysia or Indonesia or Philippines or Vietnam, what have you, is that the customer demand for and the market demand for ease of accessibility to financial service products and their experience is predominantly driven through the digital front. So if you don't have that ability to provide at table stakes a decent experience and accessibility to financial service products through a digital means, and effectively that's the mobile phone and through your web, and it's a consistent, secure experience, then, you know, you're going to be left behind. And that requires the use and implementation of effectively what, say, for instance, Red Hat provides: open source, hybrid cloud, secure architectures, software architectures and systems. And that's where this beautiful convergence happens with existing long-standing institutions in financial services adopting this beautiful, magnificent set of innovation of open source software, but in a secure, reliable, stable, maintainable, certified way. And that's you know, not to blow Red Hat's trumpet by any means at all, but they certainly did, you know, crack the special code, if you will, of bringing the magic and the madness of open source into a format that was consumable and usable by, you know, some of the most strictest and traditional and secure focused organizations being in financial institutions. And we've been able to sort of bridge that divide so that banks can reliably use this beautiful cutting edge software that is open source, but in a secure, reliable way. And that has profoundly changed and enabled financial institutions and banks to do things that I would hazard a guess would take them, and I mean this quite conservatively, you know, 10, 15 years longer to actually do if they were continuing to implement IT systems in the way that they were doing it before with proprietary technology.
Yeah, it's almost as if Red Hat and similar companies are presenting almost a fait accompli to fintech businesses. And I suppose there's an enormous pressure on those, especially those old venerable institutions like the HSBC and Morgan Chase and the like, to change their ways. I'm guessing they're under a lot of pressure from threats from new digital-only disruptive startups in, for instance, consumer banking, insurance, investment, and so on. Is there therefore a mindset amongst those older players to transform using technology?
Oh, categorically, yes. That's a very simple answer. Yes, they are. And they're making some pretty decent headway. You know, for the global brands like the Barclays and the Deutsche Banks, you know, that they're and Citibanks and those sorts of things, they're categorically, HSBC, they're categorically forging ahead with trying to accelerate and change the way that they deliver financial services in, you know, in a digital native, cloud native, if you want to use that sort of word, way, and using a whole lot of Red Hat and standing on stages. You can just search Google on YouTube for you know, talks from Barclays Bank or Deutsche Bank, Banco Santander, BBVA, you know, one of the two largest sort of Spanish banks, or ANZ Bank or Casacon Bank, or, you know, those sorts of institutions you can search that are, you know, using cutting edge technology and practices, what I call agile practices, so that they can change and adjust and deliver new services or banking products faster through, you know, the digital routes or multi-channel routes, as it's called today. Joe, if I can just quickly pick up on something you said about Google, for instance, and they're looking to, you know, and they are getting into financial services because they've got Google Pay. So I find that the banks are in this really interesting predicament where you have, you know, upwards of 1 billion people in the Southeast Asian region who are unbanked, right? So that's a huge market opportunity, and you've got rising middle income. Rising low income to middle income wealth going on. You've got this massive explosion of SME lending and high GDP growth rates, you know, obviously pre-COVID, and I think that'll sort of pick up as you know, economies start to adjust to the new post-COVID world. So you've got this really rising aspiration in the Southeast Asian region, for instance, and they're trying to figure out, how do I get access to money, you know, in a reliable way? The banks have all this money that they could lend out. They don't have good credit risk, but they're trying to distribute it through, you know, different routes. That's through digitization. And so when you have that model and you have, you know, rising incomes, the cloud companies are going, hey, how do I get access to that? Actually, I've already got them as a customer through Gmail or through, you know, my Amazon account or what have you. They want to sell them more products. So there's this interesting co-opetition and co-competitiveness where the banks are saying, I want to partner with these cloud companies, but then also actually tomorrow they could be my direct or are my direct competitor in some instances. So how do I adjust my banking services that protects me, but also means I can, you know, have this great ecosystem and partnership with the likes of the cloud companies? And I think that's where that's a really interesting existential issue for the boards of these banks to consider for today and tomorrow's risk. And having strong, what we call decoupled IT architectures that enable a bank to own and drive its IT strategy, that means it can harness, you know, these cloud providers, but also protect their intellectual property and their services so that they aren't completely or wholly tied to, for instance, these cloud providers, you know, is a very, very pertinent risk-adjusted issue that they, you know, need to face or are facing. And I think, not to blow Red Hat's trumpet, but I think it's just we're in the right place at the right time. If you don't own an IT strategy within a bank that allows you to decouple yourself and have a broad ecosystem, then you are sort of almost on a one train lane that whether or not you like it, you can't adjust and move if your partner, which is a potential cloud company, is now your direct competitor in what you're trying to do. And if you need to adjust, then you're kind of, you know, challenged by being able to make those adjustments in it. And that's driven by digitization. That's driven by IT strategy.
It's certainly led to an interesting situation, hasn't it? You know, fintech companies in competition with big cloud providers, you know, the big tech companies, the people they're in bed with already, you know, through necessity. And the prize, of course, is, as you say, there are hundreds of millions of unbanked people across the APAC region. It must be difficult for banks, certainly challenging.
Joe, it categorically is. And I can say this with, you know, real, what I call pedestrian examples, on the ground examples of the constraint and the opportunity where, because financial services, the prime mode of delivery and experience is now through digitization, that if you have an IT, and this sounds slightly technical, but Just bear with me on this. If your IT systems are architected that mean that you cannot move to different services, so say you are, if you, you know, use your words, all in bed with one cloud provider, then if that cloud provider becomes a competitor to you, that becomes so painful that you say, right, they're becoming more of a competitor rather than a cooperative partner. How do I move and shift? And that's where, you know, being agile or strategically agile comes into it. And if your IT architecture, you know, is very well designed for one particular cloud model, then it becomes very difficult to shift and move so that, you know, you can, you know, adjust how you want to deliver. Now, I do want to preface this, Joe, by saying, you know, the cloud providers and the cloud companies are wonderful partners of Red Hat. And, you know, they've been, you know, big proponents and big partners of ours and doing amazing things. So I certainly don't want to besmirch what they're doing. And you know, they are continually expanding and offering new products and services. You know, Amazon and Google, it's almost kind of like every month that they're releasing something new or acquiring something new, you know, whether it's in pharmaceuticals or it's in groceries or it's in content creation or it's in SME lending or it's in payments or it's in basic accounts or it's, you know, whatever it is, or music or streaming, you know, from selling books, they're continually growing. And they've got hundreds of millions to billions of customers, and people are very comfortable with them. So it's kind of like, how do you have good risk mitigation strategy that enables you to tap into their great innovation, but then also pivot and shift to you know, a new provider or move away from them if they become so much of a constraint or a competitor to what you're doing. And that's where you know, having the right IT architecture or open architecture, as we call it at Red Hat, driven by open source, really can help facilitate and de-risk those options for financial institutions, and we're seeing that a lot going on.
I wanted to touch on the fact that Red Hat has the old school juggernaut of IBM behind it, and the fact that you're very active in Southeast Asia and across the APAC region. And what's the reception like for Red Hat, albeit with a big US company behind it? And what's next for the region as far as Red Hat's concerned?
Yeah, look, Thanks for that question, Joe, because I really just personally love talking about Asia Pacific and obviously the ASEAN region or the Southeast Asian region, because that's kind of, you know, my where my heart is. And it's certainly safe to say that the West, if I can use that term, had been more highly open and adoptive of, you know, open source and, you know, applying cutting edge technology, you know, for the previous sort of 20 years or so, or for the past few decades. And, you know, if you look at what's in everybody's hand, there's a, you know, an Android or an iOS sort of device of some nature that's sitting in everybody's hand, right? And the commoditization of you know, IT bits has made it accessible to a whole lot of people that, you know, wouldn't necessarily be there 20 years ago. So it's certainly safe to say that the West has been the fast adopter of that. What has significantly shifted in the last 5 to 10 years, and I'd say really it's more in the last decade, but it's really accelerated in the last several years with this rising GDP, the accessibility to transparency of services and systems, the implementation of decent 4G networks, some reasonable stability in governments in the Southeast Asian region, and the need for, you know, kind of conservative fiscal policies, but the need to invest in infrastructure like education and roads and hospitals and obviously networks, that has accelerated the adoption of digital services, which then have facilitated, you know, this rise of the small and medium-sized enterprise and the entrepreneur to it. Now, that has been driven by a large degree, at least from an IT perspective, through open source and through our partnerships and through, you know, great vendors like IBM and Microsoft and Google and, you know Adobe and others, you name them, that they've been there helping to do that. And what open source does and, you know, what Red Hat brings to that is that ubiquitous access and that very low cost entry point to test and experiment and trial and then implement and learn and adjust how you apply these cutting edge architectures and IT practices and the open source practices within, you know, a large enterprise or a government agency or a medium-sized entity. And that's where I'd say, Joe, as a Westerner myself from Australia, which is what we call a mature market, the way that Southeast Asian markets and in particular financial institutions are addressing, you know, open banking or banking to the unbanked and low-cost services, going to your point earlier from, you know, cash to, you know, mobile payments without having to go through all the different other stages, they're addressing those ways in faster ways than, say, you know, long-standing institutions have done in more mature markets, because they have to. That's the way that the market adopts and wants to adopt it. And the only way to do that in a low-cost way, really, is through, you know, an open-source architecture and model.
And how about the Chinese influence in the region? I'm thinking of Tencent and Alibaba. I mean, Chinese life is very much more dictated digitally by those key players than we in the West often realise, I think. Is that influence from China being felt in the broader Asia-Pacific area?
Look, I'd have to... I'd probably answer it this way, Joe. I hear where you're coming from, but I just want to make sure that I'm not speaking out of turn with regards to how the application and the mobile first, if you will, and the lifestyle app ubiquity, you know, is being used in the West versus, say, in the more developing markets that is Southeast Asia. What I would say is that by far, definitely the number of millennials or Gen Zs that are within roughly about a six, you know, 5,000 kilometer radius of the Southeast Asia market, the majority of them live in that area, and they constitute a greater level of people than are employed in Western Europe or that are in North America. So they're a huge audience that, you know, are now pretty educated, highly educated, very aspirational, have access to, you know, a smartphone and 4G or broadband, and their expectations of what they're expecting from their service providers or, you know, consumers or brands that they use is very, very high. You know, it's kind of on par with what, you know, me in Australia is used to. So that ubiquity of usability and security through your apps and the frictionless experience, you know, is considered, you know, table stakes. And so that's where, again, coming at sort of as an example, financial institutions, because it's now, you know, it's pervasive the way we use banks and transactions and peer-to-peer payments and payment models and, you know, near-field systems. That, as a first-class citizen, as an experience, is there in Southeast Asia. And I wouldn't say that's so much driven by Tencent or Alibaba. Or what they've done is they've just, you know, which is what China's famous for, seeing what's going on in the West, saying, hey, that looks really good, I'll copy that, and then I'll add some extra flavor to it or extra features, and I'll do it a bit faster because, you know, I don't have potentially maybe the organizational political structures that slow me down from going and doing that.
There's a certain amount of necessity, as you say. I might term that necessity, though, or at least the way I think that it's seen. You might call that necessity leadership. Of course, after all, in many ways, the Asia-Pacific region is streets ahead in technology, certainly amongst the younger generations, I think. And certainly we in the West look still to Asia to lead the way. But is it a Generation Z thing, a Generation Z thing? Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much, Joe. Yeah. And I mean, just quickly to add to that, the way that, you know, Southeast Asia that I've observed thinks about the problems and the opportunities they've got ahead of them is, how do I get ubiquitous, easy, frictionless access to financial services through a digital form where there's sometimes very little credit history, where I would normally go to, say, a FICO, to, you know, what we would consider in the West possibly slightly remote or, you know, Midwest communities, because there's not a branch there, reliably, securely, frictionlessly. And that's kind of the way they're thinking about it. And because a lot of these consumers don't have a whole lot of money or purchasing power comparatively to, you know, Western countries, because their GDP per capita is considerably lower, but it's growing fast, they may not be a highly profitable customer because of the amount of money that they don't have. But my gosh, you get them in early and you give them a good experience, you get the data from those transactions and their interactions. That's really, really interesting. And how do you do it at scale, on the scale of 1 billion people that are unbanked? You know, they're the kind of problems and opportunities that they're thinking about that the West doesn't have to think about, because it's already got highly profitable customers. It knows it's a customership, if you will. It knows its attrition rates, all that sort of stuff, and it's trying to keep it and steal customers from other, you know, other banks or other institutions. Whereas in Asia or Southeast Asia, it's, you know, not as much that of, how do I steal customers, but how do I take advantage of this great opportunity, but also do it in a way that's really low cost and scalable.
Which is, of course, where Red Hat comes in. What often people forget is that if you're a developer, you're not standing alone. You're one of, I don't know, 10,000 developers right across the world. So if your boss turns around to you one day and says, look, we need to produce an app, it needs to pull in all the local insurance companies' quotes and put them in one place and present the best quotes in this consumer-facing app, there's actually a good chance that at least a decent chunk of the necessary work's been done already by someone somewhere. And the chances are they've published it, so you can go and look and download and contribute. However, anyway, I've got to stop enthusing over open source so much. My doctor says I shouldn't get too excited at my age. So I'll turn now, if I may, to asking about any events that you guys might be running, online or otherwise, coming up, or any resources you can point our listeners towards?
Yeah. Hey, Joe, thanks very much for asking that. So two things I want to mention. Recently, we had our global Red Hat summit, which is a global event that we would normally host as like many, you know, corporations in a physical space. That was in April, but we had to do it online and virtually. So that's where people can participate. And we had upwards of 20 to 30,000 people that attended that online, and people can go and watch those talks, and they're all recorded, and people can go and listen to that. So that was recently done, and we had, you know, amazing talks from Verizon, BMW, and BBVA Bank, and ANZ Bank, and there's just a plethora of organizations that are talking about their journey, what they've done, how they've changed, lessons they've learned, those sorts of things. So it's one of those great, I guess, virtual events that you can go and register and replay these talks by these customers and our partners. And it's a little bit of a space where Red Hat can show off what customers are doing, and customers just tell their story, which is, I think, really, really wonderful. The other one that I think is just a little bit more interesting that's coming up is we've got Red Hat Forum in Asia Pacific. And so this is normally, again, where we would go and have it in lots of cities across Asia Pacific and in the ASEAN region. But that's not going to happen physically, but we are going to be doing it virtually online as well. So that's something to go and look at. If you go to redhat.com and search in forum, Red Hat Forum, then there'll certainly be some dates as to when those events will happen virtually online, and people can participate and register.
So, unfortunately, time's beaten us, as usual. So on a personal note, my thanks go out to Ben Henschel, who's General Manager at Red Hat for the Asia-Pacific region. Thanks, Ben.
Oh, that's very nice of you, Joe. But great questions, and thanks very much for asking. Good interactive discussions. I thought it was really good, so thank you.
And I hope that you, the listeners, can join us next time on the next episode of the Tech Means Business podcast. Bye for now.